Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, and I'm sitting alongside my colleague Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, Packers-Browns, Sunday noon central kickoff in Cleveland. It's almost upon us. Our final show of the week here, and that means talking keys to victory for the Green Bay Packers. And as always, we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. What do you got?
It obviously has to start with the perimeter weapons. You look at the Packers, and certainly you want to be able to run the ball every week like they did against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 199 rushing yards, 66 of those coming off of scrambles and read option plays from Brett Hundley. That helped them pick up that victory, so I don't want to discredit that whatsoever. But on the other side of it, we know how Mike McCarthy likes to run his offense. We know the prolific passing attacks that the Green Bay has been known for. You need more than 84 passing yards. So
absolutely.
Randall Cobb, you need to get him targets. You need to get him touches. You need to get Jordy Nelson going. Davante Adams, I mean, still had four catches, I think, for 42 yards in that contest. There were some big conversions there down the stretch. He certainly has that relationship with Brett Hundley. But getting more of really getting Nelson and Cobb going, I think, is going to be really key. Because as decent as the Cleveland Browns are defensively, you don't know what's going to happen with Jabril Peppers. You're not exactly sure what that slot's going to look like for them. I think the middle of the field is a place that the Packers can attack, and both Nelson and Cobb can help you there in different ways.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, because I think the Packers have to be prepared. Obviously, you're going to try to run the ball. We know that the offensive balance is the key to success with Brett Hundley at quarterback. But the Packers have to be prepared for this Browns run defense to really make it difficult to run the football. It's, you know, their stadium. This is the strength of the Browns defense, is against the run with that front seven. We've been talking about those linebackers, Schobert and Kirksey, and all the tackles they've racked up, you know, over the season. And Myles Garrett, who obviously leads them in sacks, but is also, you know, a heck of a presence on the edge against the run. So Packers have to be prepared for the fact that that this game on a potentially windy, cold day, you know, on the shores of Lake Erie, as they say, that this game might be in Brett Hundley's hands. And that means that Brett Hundley needs to get the game in Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb and Davante Adams' hands.
Yeah, and the dangerous thing that Cleveland can do is they can defend the run without really deploying a safety in the box. That was one of the biggest compliments I think Edgar Bennett was paying to them, in terms of they really can defend the run well out of a two-shell defense. That's not easy to do.
No, it's not.
Usually you need that guy roving. You see what HaHa Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett can do when they're operating near the line of scrimmage, providing that extra additional support. They really challenge opposing offenses to run the ball against their two-shell coverage, and that allows them to keep the safety back, eliminate some of those downfield opportunities. There are going to be chances still, as I said, whether it's through the middle of the field, whether it's near the boundary. There's going to be chances to really force Cleveland to open things up. And then when you get those opportunities, that's where, whether it's Aaron Jones or Jamal Williams, however they want to deploy those running backs, those guys really have to take advantage. As I said earlier this week, Mike, I think it really breaks, when you break it all down, Packers have had some really good passing performances. They've had some really good running performances. They're still looking for that perfect mesh of both in a game.
Yeah, it's time to put it together.
And this is an opportunity to put it together.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think it goes without saying that the Packers need to, offensively, they need to avoid the three and outs.
Yeah.
We saw how much of an impact that had. You know, you have a 10-point lead early on in the second quarter against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have everything going your way. You've scored on defense. You've blocked a punt, all of that. But then you start the second half with three straight three and outs, and all of a sudden, the game completely shifts. Now, you can't expect the Packers offense and Brett Hundley, any offense for that matter, to score points on every single possession. But if you can at least move the chains a couple of times and avoid the three and outs, you can win the field position battle. You can give your defense the rest. It's when you just go three plays and punt that the momentum in games starts to shift. And if the Packers get into one of these three and out type of ruts, you know, on the road against Cleveland, a team that's going to be all jacked up trying to win their first game of the season with an 0-12 record, you know, they've really got to avoid it.
Yeah, three and outs, one of the things you can really accomplish, other than the points, other than the field position, is wearing down an opposing defense throughout the course of a game. Mike McCarthy always talks about 50 to 55 plays. That's not what the offense is looking for, because it means the Cleveland Browns defense, in this particular case, would be getting an opportunity to sit back, to rest, to recover, and be sharp when you get into those third and fourth quarters. When you're able to hit those targets more, and yeah, you don't want every week to be a shootout, But when you're looking more at 70 plays, 75 plays in a contest, that's where you really everything else kind of takes care of itself. The field position, the time of possession battle, it shows that you're dictating tempo.
Yeah.
And there are some cases. Last week was a good example of that, where the Packers didn't win that battle, but yet they won the overall war of that game. This one, with the Cleveland Browns playing as many teams as tightly as they have so far this season, I think this is an opponent. If you can come out, really get that first punch right off the bat, the Browns have nothing to lose. But at the same time, there are a lot of things going through their minds right now. Their GM just got fired. They're on this lengthy losing streak again. You need to kind of crush any of their hopes early on. Not saying that you can't win it late, but being able to establish that early, I think, is their cleanest way to pulling out a victory there.
Yeah, and if this game is tight in the fourth quarter, the Packers have to be ready to absolutely handle everything the Cleveland Browns can throw at them. Because if the Browns are sensing a chance to win, a chance to get that first win, they're going to go all out. They're not going to hold back at all.
The Browns have lost 12 games, Mike. They've lost 27 of their last 28. They want a victory. They're going to do whatever they have to do to get it this week and beyond.
Yeah, for sure. With that, we'll toss to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball here. Keys to victory, Packers-Browns on Sunday in Cleveland. Lay it on me.
Has to be the secondary, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even if the Packers were 100% healthy, if Kevin King and Devon House and, you know, Demaryius Randall, both safeties, everything was perfect, we'd still be queuing in on the secondary because of Josh Gordon being back and what he did in that first game back. Corey Coleman is a guy you can't look past. They do have weapons there. It's just been an issue trying to deliver them the ball. Well, I think that battle becomes enhanced when you look at the fact that Kevin King is not going to be out there. He's on injured reserve now. Devon House appears to be highly questionable, I'll put, for this contest.
Yep.
Demaryius Randall, as you wrote this week, willing to play wherever, but where do you put him? Morgan Burnett is a guy that could potentially play the star position, but if you put him there, then you're giving up something in the back end. So there are so many different pieces that Dom Capers and Joe Witt have to figure out in this equation. And the other thing is, too, Kizer, with 20 turnovers this year, the opportunities that you're going to get, so whether it's Josh Hawkins or whether it's Morgan Burnett, you have to be able to capitalize on those.
Yeah. You have to believe that even with Josh Gordon coming back and how he changes this Cleveland Browns offense, you still have to believe you're going to get a turnover opportunity or two from DeShone Kizer. That's how this entire season has gone for the young quarterback out of Notre Dame. The Packers are going to have to capitalize on those opportunities. I am very curious to see how the Packers match up here against the weapons that you've been talking about. I have a feeling Demaryius Randall is going to spend a lot of time on Josh Gordon, and I think Morgan Burnett might be spending a lot of time on tight end David Njoku, if I pronounce that correctly, the young tight end from Miami, because I think not only does Josh Gordon give this Cleveland Browns offense a legitimate big play weapon and a guy who can be very difficult to handle, but his presence on the field, I think, potentially opens up some opportunities for Njoku, a very athletic tight end who can make some big plays in his own right. And this is a combination now, I think, that the Packers have to watch out for.
Yeah, and certainly the Browns did not know what was going to happen with Gordon's situation. I mean, they might have had an idea that he could be back this season. They certainly weren't planning for it. David Njoku is a guy that I think when they drafted him out of Miami earlier this year, they saw him as a game-changing type tight end, those hybrid tight ends, those guys that really can be difference makers in the middle of the field. The interesting dynamic that getting Gordon brings to this offense is, I'll be honest with you, Mike, I think if you line up all the receivers in the league, he might be in the conversation for just the most physically gifted. Just in terms of what he has in his body and what he's able to do in this game, for him to come back to put up 85 yards after not playing for 3 years.
Yep.
And as people said, if the accuracy was there, if it was a little bit more on point, could have easily been a 100-yard game, 150-yard game. They were missing that. I mentioned earlier this week, the 2013 season, they ran through three different quarterbacks that year. I think they ended up passing for about 4,000 yards, maybe a little less. He had 1,600 yards.
1,600 yards, yeah.
You talk about defenses knowing exactly where the ball is going both then and now, and yet Gordon still finds ways to have production. He is a really dynamic player. I think this is going to be a good test for this Green Bay defense because the Packers want to get on a run here. And as we talked about earlier this week, they're going to see some really talented receivers. I think in a lot of ways, although Kaiser's been kind of iffy there with his accuracy, this is a good test to match up with him, especially in Demaryius Randall's case, if that ends up being what happens.
Yeah, and you know that the Browns are going to try to feed him the ball. You just have to look at the statistics from last week against the Chargers, which we talked about. Kaiser attempted 32 passes. 11 of the 32 were targeted to Josh Gordon.
Right.
One out of every three. The math is pretty simple there. That being said, one thing that we haven't talked about much heading into this game is the Cleveland Browns running attack. I know they don't have a dynamic rusher. I believe is it Isaiah Crowell?
He's the number one. They have Duke Johnson as well.
Yeah, is their number one back. But I bring that up because the Packers' run defense wasn't what we were used to seeing last week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. With a backup running back, Peyton Barber, I believe, was his name for Tampa Bay. He had a bigger game than anybody expected. And the Packers' run defense, you know, showed a few more leaks than it had. And Green Bay has to watch out for that because when you're talking the type of weather that you could be going into here and then what's on film from the Tampa Bay game, the Browns may come out and try to and just try to see what holes they can find early on here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when they have a very similar script to what Green Bay was trying to do with Brett Hundley, with a young quarterback that's getting his first taste for things, establish the run early. The problem for them is that Crowell hasn't been really as explosive as he was his first three seasons.
Yeah.
Last year, I thought he really shot on the scene as one of the top running backs in the league, considering the fact that they didn't see him as a featured back earlier in the year. They were sort of leaning towards Duke Johnson in that role, and I think injuries became kind of an issue there. Crowell gets a chance, nearly becomes a 1,000-yard rusher. This year, a long carry of 27 yards. They just haven't really been able to find that real base to build a foundation on with their running game. They're talented guys, though, and as we saw last week, even if there aren't any guys that are going to jump off the page and really wow you, they can have production, and the Packers, as decent and as good as they've been with their run defense since the bye week, this is another team that you cannot take for granted.
Yeah, and we will have to see just what the winds off Lake Erie, maybe the factor that they play in this game on Sunday afternoon. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, it's time to send out a very well-deserved congratulations to a Packers veteran player, and I'm talking about outside linebacker Clay Matthews. He is the Packers nominee for the 2017 Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award. And as far as Matthews is concerned, I think the timing is about as perfect as it could get, in terms of the fact that he became the Packers' all-time sack leader this year. And then we've also seen his involvement really with the Cure Duchenne, a charity that he's very involved in. We've seen that ramp up quite a bit and become much more high profile. And congratulations to Clay. I know this is an annual thing. You know, somebody gets it every year, but something to definitely be proud of, and something that Matthews certainly takes seriously.
Yeah, and you look at when they choose these Man of the Year nominations, and there's so much that is built into that locker room and deciding whose cause. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that do some phenomenal work in the community. But the fact that Matthews got this recognition and really, I think, did it under the radar to some extent, maybe not necessarily in him getting his message out there, but this is something that I think, you know, when I first saw that he was the nominee for going back even to the Chamber of Commerce Community Service
Award
earlier this year, which has sometimes been a precursor to the person, that the player that ends up getting the Man of the Year Award, I don't want to say it was surprised, but it's something that you can tell is such a big passion project for him, and that so many different people recognize it. You know, Clay Matthews is such a big name when you look at the broad scope of things. I mean, him and Aaron Rodgers, I think when you talk about nationally, are really the two biggest brands out of this organization, and certainly what he's done in his time in Green Bay. So to throw his weight behind it, to throw his name behind it, I think really brings a big awareness to this topic. I'll be honest with you, until he really stepped out in front of it, I believe it was last year, we really started hearing more about it. I didn't really know much about it. So yeah. He said from the beginning, you know, the guys like Jayron Elliott, Sam Berrington really motivated him to be more active, to get more involved. The Packers' two previous Man of the Year nominees, certainly Aaron Rodgers has been in that conversation as well. So for him to get this, I think says a lot about him and his willingness to really go out there and support something that, that his name can really benefit.
Yeah, and just to give the background on Cure Duchenne, this nonprofit organization that I mentioned, Duchenne is a very rare form of muscular dystrophy. It affects mostly boys, has a very debilitating effect on their muscles. It's a degenerative muscular disease. And a lot of times, unfortunately, you know, boys don't even make it to their early 20s. You know, it's a very devastating disease. There is no cure. Cure Duchenne is working, you know, round the clock, as they say, to try to find a cure for this. Matthews initially got involved back in 2010, did a public service announcement for the organization, and then with the Packers winning the Super Bowl and he kind of became a rising star in the league, things took off from there. And then this past weekend, for the My Cause, My Cleats campaign that the NFL had, Matthews was wearing cleats in support of Cure Duchenne. It was actually his cleat designs were randomly chosen from boys afflicted with Duchenne, had submitted their designs into this random drawing. And so then he was wearing those, and then he gets 2.5 yeah. sacks to add to his all-time career-leading total in Green Bay. So a really special day, and actually one of those boys whose design was picked for the cleats was in attendance at Lambeau Field on Sunday. So just a really nice, you know, kind of full circle thing, the way this all came together, and now Matthews has the nomination for the Man of the Year.
Certainly a really special day for him, and I do wonder, Mike, obviously the My Cause, My Cleats, you can use them only 1 week. I have to wonder if those things will find his way back into his bag on his way to Cleveland. Certainly a way for him to break back out there. We know it. He'd been talking about it, you know, kind of that grind, trying to get those sacks again. Certainly yeah. had to battle through that groin injury, had a big day, and certainly couldn't come at a better time for him.
Yeah, and we'll see. There will eventually be three finalists for Man of the Year across the league that are selected, and then the winner is announced at that NFL yeah. honors show the night before the Super Bowl. Hard to believe that it won't go to J.J. Watt from the yeah. Houston Texans, but certainly takes nothing away from Clay Matthews and him getting this honor.
Yeah, and especially with his name in recognition and the work he's done with that, I mean, if he can, you know, even get in that top three like Aaron Rodgers did a number of years ago to be a finalist for it, that's a huge honor as well.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, a little bit of sponsor business here. Wes, picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11, which is just around the corner, by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Sub's, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, as we look at what's going on elsewhere around the league in Week 14, one result already in the books, and unfortunately it did not go Green Bay's way, as the Atlanta Falcons beat the New Orleans Saints on Thursday Night Football 20-17. The Saints 10 or 15 yards from a potential game-winning touchdown in the final minute there, and the Atlanta Falcons get the interception in the end zone to preserve the victory. So that one didn't go Green Bay's way in terms of this wild card picture, but a couple of others to keep an eye on. Minnesota is at Carolina, and Seattle is at Jacksonville. It would certainly help Green Bay's cause if the Panthers and the Seahawks were to take some losses.
Yeah, and insider inboxes, I was starting to answer some of those questions on Friday. People asking, I really don't want to cheer for the Vikings. It just doesn't feel
natural.
It's
really hard for people to do.
So here's the compromise I made with them. Cheer for them this weekend. They got Cincinnati and Chicago coming up on the schedule. Boo as much as you want. Do whatever you want to do. But the Packers certainly need a loss here for the Panthers, because then that's what puts them in the conversation for trying to get a tiebreaker.
Yep.
They hold the tiebreaker over the Cowboys, which pretty much eliminates Dallas for the most part, and hold the tiebreaker over the Seahawks if they could happen to falter. The problem is those other two NFC South teams. with Atlanta and New Orleans. Now, New Orleans, as long as they keep winning, who cares? Yet one from the division has to go anyway. The Atlanta one hurts, though, for that reason. So if the Vikings can do Green Bay a favor and go into Carolina and pick up a W, it would be much appreciated from the Packers' regard.
Yeah, a couple of these games now, the Seattle getting that victory over Philadelphia last week, and now the Falcons getting the victory over New Orleans. Yeah. Those were not what Packers fans certainly were hoping for. Another big game in the NFC that isn't necessarily tied to Green Bay's chances, but one a lot of people are going to have their eyes on, Wes, because it's a potential playoff preview in the NFC, and that's Philadelphia going on the road to Los Angeles to play the Rams, two first-place teams from the Eastern and Western divisions, and you know, should be a great matchup.
In two of the most improved teams, if not the most improved teams in the NFL this season, certainly.
Good point.
The Rams are already in that conversation, and then you look at what Philadelphia did early last year as kind of a little bit of an entree to that, and then coming through. I mean, really, it comes down to Wentz versus Goff.
Yeah.
And these are two young quarterbacks that are going to be tied to each other for a very long time. Wentz got off to that fast start last year. Goff's starting to catch up a little bit, playing well in Sean McVay's system. And the other thing, too, give credit to the weapons around them. How you look at some of these guys have reemerged. Alshon Jeffrey just gets the extension now with Philadelphia after signing a one-year deal. And then the weapons that Goff has been utilizing, it's been really impressive as well.
Yeah, and we have to see now. We saw Goff and the Rams bounce back from that loss in Minnesota. They came back with a strong performance last week. Now the Eagles need to bounce back from that rough game in Seattle with another big game out on the West Coast. So some really good playoff matchups in the NFC. But with that, we will call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. How many times have I said that now?
Three times.
Yeah,
you're good.
Yeah, okay. At Packers is the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.